So it's 3 o'clock now. Are you ready to go? Good. So hello from Western Australia, from Nolamara, Dhammaloka Centre, Dhammaloka, the light of the Dhamma, to be able to teach, serve, and help make a better world, and especially through meditation. So today, the meditation is live streamed in an empty hall to keep all of the regulations which are necessary. And it doesn't really matter too much for me anyway, because when I close my eyes, it's like there's nobody here. And we're also trained over many years of meditation to learn how to adapt to the different situations which one finds oneself in life. And that ability to adapt to different circumstances means that you can meditate in a noisy place, you can meditate in a time when you're sick, you can meditate in a time when you're very exhausted. There's so many different occasions when I've just challenged myself, my body, and the situation I'm in order to see whether all these so-called theories are true or not. And I found out they are true. That I've meditated when I've been in a fever with typhus fever and really, really weak. I meditated in the middle of the CBD opposite a video store, blaring out very loud music. And meditated when I'm exhausted. So many times you've been able to sit down and just be quiet because you know the essence of meditation. And in particular, the essence of meditation is to learn this beautiful art of contentment, inner contentment, where you don't want anything in the whole world, just instead just to be here. It's abandoning that search for something else and realize what you already have is more than enough to be very peaceful and very content. And of course, for those of you who've listened to me teach before, I'm referring to what in Buddhism we call the five hindrances. Because those five hindrances are what not only stop the mind being peaceful, but it also stops you being wise. It stops you seeing things as they truly are. And those five hindrances are headed by wanting something. In other words, instead of looking at what you have, of where you are, of what's happening now, instead gazing somewhere into the future, some other place, some other time, where you think that there I might find some meaning, some freedom, some fulfillment. And realizing every time you do that, it's just more of the same. More work, more discontent, more problems, more things to solve in the world. And sometimes you wonder, is that the path? But fortunately, that there are some very wise meditation teachers. I had a very great one with someone like Ajahn Chah. But also there was many other teachers, many other great monks and nuns which I met on the journey. And those also were saying that, why do you have to keep going here and going there looking for truth? Instead of going out there, instead of going over there, instead of go inside. Go into this body, into this mind, into this moment, into the silence, and see what's there. And of course, that sounds profound, but it's a very difficult thing to do. If you want to go into the silence, that wanting is just going into the wrong place. So somehow, we have to learn, sometimes a bit of trial and error, to be able to let go of all wanting and just to be here. And to be able to do that, there is, if you let go of all the wanting, when the wanting is gone, so is the wanting not to have something or want to get rid of things, the second hindrance. When the wanting disappears, you're not wasting your mental energy, which means the tiredness, the dullness disappears. When you don't want anything, you're not restless, going over here, going over there, always looking for something, which is the fourth hindrance. When you're not wanting anything, you don't have any doubts. You don't want to know. you're just knowing. It stops this whole journey of the mind, trying to find peace, meaning, stillness somewhere else, other than here. So in the meditation we start by just looking at our body. And our body is important for us. Even right now, the reason why I'm teaching meditation in an empty hall is because of our concern for our bodies, COVID-19. But you know, there's so much more to life than just a body. We've got to care for it. There's much more to care for. And so we just relax our body. And relaxing our body, it may sound simple to you to relax your body. Sometimes people relax by going for a run, or they relax just by surfing in the sea. That is not, sorry, surfing on the sea. If you don't surf well, you go in the sea. But real going inside, real relaxing, is learning how to feel every part of your body, to really get to know it, to get to know it so thoroughly that you can care for it. And this is where the path to relaxation, the path to letting go, the path to going inwards, always is with caring. This beautiful loving kindness, but not just kindness, the awareness as well, focused in the right place, the kindfulness. So for years I've practiced the kindfulness on my own body. So kind to it, you can look at any part of it and just relax it. Relax it so thoroughly that it disappears. And when you can relax something, you tend to go inside. And this is the old simile which I've given many times in meditation retreats of the 1,000-petal lotus. And a lotus is closed at night time, but in the early morning when the light of the sun and the warmth of the sun hit the outermost sheath of the lotus, slowly, in its own time, it opens up, layer after layer after layer. One layer of petals is open, the one inside is still closed. It means the warmth and the light of the sun can reach that inner layer, so it too can open up. He does this in the beautiful natural process, always going in, deeper and deeper inside. And you can see that when that lotus starts to open up, what you're doing? What you're doing is avoiding the 5 hindrances. If you want something, your lotus closes. You're not looking right here, because the warmth and the light of the sun, I should have said, the warmth of the sun is kindness, and the light of the sun is mindfulness. The mindfulness and kindfulness coming together produces the opening. You go inwards, go deeper in to where you are. Because you're just aware, and you're kind to what you're aware of. That kindness is important addition to mindfulness, because it is connects you and keeps you connected to this moment. I often mentioned, for so many years ago when my mind was restless, and I would be told to just to go and take that mind and bring it back, and it'd wander off again, and just go after it and bring it back again. But don't be harsh to it, don't be cruel, don't be violent to your own mind and body. But every time it wandered off, it was an endless, always bringing it back again. Until one day I thought, well, why does my mind wander off? Why can't it stay put in this moment? And I realized it was because it was running away from me, because I wasn't kind to my mind. It was afraid of me. I had maltreated it. Why would you run away from anyone if they're kind to you and respectful and gentle. So it didn't really matter what I was experiencing. I decided to change my attitude from controlling it and wanting it to be in this moment, just to making peace with whatever happened. Being kind and being gentle. That's all. It's the second factor of the Noble Eightfold Path. And when I apply that, my mind didn't want to go anywhere. My mind was happy with me. It was happy to stick with a dear old friend. We spent many hours at peace together. I realized the kindness and the mindfulness together is what keeps you in this moment. But keeping you in this moment is not a sort of static, dull state. The longer you stay in this moment, the deeper you go in. When you don't do anything, that's when things happen. And so what happens is, you're watching your body relaxing every part of it. And as you're relaxing it with kindness and awareness, soon your body vanishes. You can't feel your hands. You can't feel your legs. Can't feel your back, your head. And that was so wonderful in places like Northeast Thailand. There was no air conditioners, it's so hot sometimes. When there was mosquitoes buzzing around all over the place. When you sat still, the feelings in your body were sometimes very unpleasant. But you knew how just to stay there until your body vanished. You couldn't feel the mosquitoes anymore. You couldn't feel the heat or the cold. You could sit, say, in a CBD and so noisy for 2 hours on the pavement, so quiet inside, while so noisy outside, until you couldn't hear the noise anymore. You went inside. And that ability just to be still, not to fight the world, as Ajahn Chah would often teach us. It's not the sound disturbs you, you disturb the sound. You stop disturbing the sound, and the sound disappears. And you go inside. And of course, those of you who've participated in these guided meditations on a Saturday afternoon know that this is how I'm going to lead you in the meditation, to actually to scan the body with kindness, relaxing it, making it at ease. It doesn't have to be totally pain-free. It just needs to be at ease, so it can totally vanish. And then go into the mind, because the body is just the outer layer of petals. Go into the mind, the emotional world. And instead of looking for something in the future or the past, if the mind goes off into the future, it's usually wanting something. That's what propels the mind away from this present moment. Wanting takes it off into the future. Ill will is remembering something from the past. By letting go of the past and the future, those first two hindrances are just gone. They've got no place. Like two birds, they've got no place to roost. Past and future is their nesting places. You take those two away and they just don't exist anymore. And of course from that, the dullness. I always thought the dullness needed a big cup of coffee to overcome dullness. Or you've got to put some energy in, but that was more wanting. But over years and years of practice, you realize the more still you are, the more you don't do things, the more you give up wanting, the more your energy gets stronger and stronger and stronger. You don't fight dullness. You make peace with it. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. And you find that slowly but irresistibly the dullness disappears and your mindfulness gets empowered. And that's one part of meditation I don't know why I don't hear other people teaching about it enough. I don't hear it in books, that the powerful mindfulnesses and the superpower mindfulnesses, those are what make meditation just so gorgeous. Just when you're just so still, And after the meditation, you open your eyes, and every leaf on the bushes outside are just doubly green, more deep, more intense color than you've ever seen before. And the feeling of the wind on your face, it's just so gorgeous. And even if you have a cup of tea or something to eat, everything is like enhanced. It's more and more and more delightful. That is a sign that mindfulness is getting powerful. And that powerful mindfulness is never restless. It's got this great energy and it stays with something. That time when, after a very lovely retreat, in the middle of a retreat, one of my first retreats, I think it actually was my first retreat when I was still a layperson, and having the opportunity to go for a walk for 1 hour every morning, and my walk didn't last more than 5 minutes, and I saw my beautiful clump of bamboo, and I just stared at it. It was gorgeous. I didn't move. The delight, because my hindrances were so suppressed, I could just look at something and see its deep beauty, gave rise to the stillness. The ability just to hold the perception, not really hold it, the perception held me, and just be there, enjoying every moment of this. That's where the restlessness disappears. And of course the doubt is working. There's something inside of you, even if you're not much experienced in meditation, you can feel that this is real, this is authentic, that something magical is happening. Call it magical, just mean it's something which is unusual. You're peaceful, you're still, you're happy, you have some power. It's not coming from you. You're disappearing. You're vanishing. All the doing is stopping and it's dead. There's nothing. And that is just so powerful. And of course, you go into the center of the present moment, time vanishes. And these words, they vanish too. All of the descriptions. The descriptions are just so imperfect to describe what you're experiencing. The words just don't catch it. You know, every now and again, I used to read poetry when I was a student, and sometimes the poets could capture reality, at least get close to it. But that was a great poet. In all of the things which they wrote, there's only a few passages which really inspired and brought tears to my eyes, because they'd captured something real. But words are just so hard to capture reality. So that's why we go into the silent mind. In the silent mind, then the body really starts to vanish. Much of what you think about, what you know, your world, disappears. You feel your breath, only thing moving. It becomes delightful. Your mindfulness is increasing, just like a bamboo tree can look so beautiful. Your breath just going in and out, it's gorgeous. No two breaths are ever the same. You see that? Deeply the whole breath. And this is not something you aim for. That's just losing the present moment. All aiming, aspiring means the future. You're just here. And this is just what you feel, what you know, just what happens. You're a passenger. You're on a journey. You're not the driver, you're not the pilot. You're not in charge. If you start to be in charge, the whole thing just falls apart. You just let go, just be, and disappear. And of course, when the breath vanishes, beautiful what we call nimittas, images in your mind. They're not out there in the world, they're inside. And the more that your five senses of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching vanish, the more these beautiful lights, that's what most people experience them as, just appear. But please, if you want to achieve those lights, you're wasting your time. This is just a result of doing nothing, of letting go, of just renouncing. This is what happens. And as those lights come, then you're really going so deep in the meditation. And they go deeper into the bliss of those lights. You get into jhanas. Just like the Buddha said, you can't feel the body. There's no thoughts in the mind. The mind doesn't move. Powerful. Not like anything which experiences in the world. They're real. They're attainable. In the sense of you can experience them. Monk, nun, layman, laywoman. You can do it. This is a path to do that. Sometimes it can be quite frightening when you stop to think. If you let go of all that thinking and just enjoy the feelings, just have that emotional confidence. This is a path which the Buddha taught, been practiced for so many centuries, and it works. So, overcoming those hindrances, get into deep states of meditation, and understanding so much more, so much insight, into just who you are, or rather, who you're not. Now we're going to find out. So, if you'd like to just adjust your posture again. Sorry for going on a bit long, but it's just my habit. So close your eyes. Ooh. And with your eyes closed, you do a very quick sort of make sure just roughly my body is comfortable. And a rough check of my body, now a more particular check of the body. I usually start with my legs, from my toes, feet, ankles, all the way up my calves and shins to knees and thighs, just checking on everything. Sometimes you go reasonably fast, but you don't miss out any part. And if I find that, say, a foot is not properly positioned on top of, like my left foot is on top of my right shin, if that's not comfortable, I'm going to adjust it, but actually it's pretty good. I'll just adjust it a tiny bit. And I get a feedback pretty much the same as I suspected. Because this mindfulness does give you feedback. It's adjusting at the very beginning. It's just getting you into a good position. And once my legs are really good, then I check my butt. I'm sitting on a cushion. Sometimes when people come and talk to me before I start meditating, I don't have time to really adjust my cushion properly. But today I came in here a few minutes earlier and it's an empty hall. I had time to really adjust the cushion, so it just feels really great. And then my back, starting with the waist. Give my back a good stretch. Oh, that's nice. Once I stretch it, it's doing something, but then I let go. My body relaxes to a deeper position, a deeper state of contentment than it was before. Just move my shoulders around just to make sure they're really good. And of course my shoulder muscles. Because I wear robes, I've got to make sure that the roll, which is over my left shoulder, is just right. It's just a little bit too loose. It's a bit falling off, I'm just going to adjust it. That's great. And then just listen. I like to be aware of a few parts of my body which, if I don't really pay them enough attention, they get tight and cause me aches and pains. And those shoulders are one part of me which I learn to feel thoroughly. Really get to know my shoulders. My left shoulder is a little bit tighter than my right shoulder. So I did a few movements. Now I just use the mind. The mind to see if I can relax those muscles in my shoulders. Sometimes I do visualizations. Sometimes I do suggestions. I try so many things until you find what works for you. Because when your awareness is on your shoulders, you can feel when they tighten up. You can feel when they get loose. You can know when they become so comfortable. They're really, really, really relaxed. From the shoulders, I go down my arms to the elbows, the forearms, the wrists, and the hands. When I look at my hands, they're not in such a good position, so I'm going to adjust them. Today I'm doing my right hand over the left hand. The thumbs slightly touching. It was a posture which I was taught when I was young. Don't always follow it. Don't always need to, but today it feels good. And I stay experiencing the feelings, the sensations in my hands. And there's an underlying wish for them to be well and happy. Just like if ever I visit someone who is sick, I wish them happiness and well-being, a little smile, maybe a Buddhist chant for them, if they want it, if that's what they would relate to, for them to be at peace and happy. Do the same thing to my hands. And they respond. It's almost as if they're saying, "Thank you, Ajahn Brahm, for thinking of us. For wishing as well." My hands get all loose and happy and relaxed. So now's the time to go back up to my shoulders and my neck, making sure my head is well balanced on top of the neck. And then making sure I give a bit of attention to my throat. There's always something flowering this time of year. Always something giving some sort of allergy or just only a slight irritation. But I can feel that little irritation in my throat. I care for it. I don't try and get rid of it. I don't cure it. I care for it. Such a powerful little insight. If you try and cure, that's ill will. If he's caring for it, it's in this moment. And the caring works. Curing is a small problem. When I care for my throat as it is, it relaxes. I don't do this in order to relax my throat. I do this and the throat responds. And then the last part to my face. You can be aware of, oh, all these years and I still haven't really got a good word for the feeling around my eyes and my mouth. I know exactly what it is. and I relax it, feeling those muscles. And through trial and error, knowing how to loosen the tension in the muscles around my eyes and the tightness in the muscles around my mouth. Oh, feeling them just go all soft. Leave a little smile. This one's a natural one. Relaxing other parts of the body if you need to. Then I've gone through my whole body, toes to head. I just am with my body, relaxed to the max. And I get this wonderful, delightful feeling. Like you've just gone to a massage or a hot bath or... It's like my body says, thank you for looking after me. So you're back, you're welcome. So don't try and ever escape from my body. Just care for it. This beautiful feeling of delight, of friendship, of care. And my body relaxes even more. I also just love that experience of watching my body get even more relaxed all by itself. Because my main meditation object is the delight of relaxation. A bodily ease. And I stay there a little while. Then it's time to go inwards. It does it by itself. Start to go inside. My body is not a problem anymore. I go inside to my peaceometer. How peaceful am I this afternoon? Or how agitated? And I never blame myself or anybody. Sometimes I have many things to do. Sometimes it's disturbances, physical or work. I just know. And I also know that when I don't blame anybody or anything or myself, when I just look and care, the reading on my piezometer goes down. I calm my mind. Just coming into this moment. This moment is beautiful, it's good, it's delightful. This is a little trick of gaining delight in a relaxed body. It means you come into this moment quite naturally. You don't concentrate or focus on it, it just comes to you, it's where you are. Well, I know my past and my future were just vanished. Just now, just here. It's peaceful. If I want to, I can look those first and second hindrances of wanting or ill will. They're asleep, they're knocked out, they're not here. I just stay. Try not to give things names. Go deeper into this. Sometimes if you give things a name, it starts my intellectual, logical argument or discourse or theory or something. It takes you away from this. Speech never drives you to the center. It just orbits around things, never landing on what it's trying to describe. And the silent mind is peaceful. It's very attractive. So I never need to force myself onto it. Rather to let it happen. And that's when you experience your breath. Just noticing the breath as it comes in, noticing as it goes out. Not forced, not chosen, just happens. In the moment, silent, not wanting anything in the world, not trying to attain anything or get something, just trying to let go more and more. At this point, I'm going to be silent. When I start speaking again, it's towards the end of the meditation. This is silence for your happiness and peace. For you to go inside. getting close to the end of the meditation period. How do you feel inside? Those hindrances, how absent are they? Wanting, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness, worry, doubt. In meditation they vanish. You get peaceful. And peace is delightful. The longer you stay in the delight of peace, the deeper the peace gets, and the more profound and enjoyable the delight. And the more at ease is your body. You can feel it gets more healthy, more empowered. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times to end the meditation. Please wait until the last bell rings and then open your eyes. Well, wow. 400. Okay, very good. You're very good at this. Excellent. So, here we have the first question. Some monks in Sri Lanka say that they are arahat, and people question them why they can't do anything to overcome COVID-19. Is that a reasonable question to throw at them? Can meditation do more? First of all, if you see anyone and they claim that they are enlightened, you can know 100% for sure that they are not. People don't say that they are enlightened. I like quoting one of the Buddha's teachings, where this monk came up to the Buddha and said to the Buddha, someone who is enlightened never thinks they are better than anybody else, never thinks they are worse than anybody else, never thinks they're the same as anybody else. I said, yeah, correct. And a short time later, another monk came and said the same to the Buddha. And then the Buddha turned around to his attendant, Ananda, and said, those were two new arahats, fully enlightened beings. So they don't go and tell me they're enlightened. They just tell me they're understanding. Letting go of the sense of self and comparing, and that's all gone. And that's how people let me know to the Buddha that they are enlightened. And they've disappeared, they've vanished. Enlightenment is not an attainment, it's a disappearance, it's a vanishing. Vanishing of their sense of self. And anyway, to overcome COVID-19, do we really want lose this opportunity of not controlling things, but learning to be at peace with things. There's so much in life that we will think we don't want. We want something else. And of course, you cannot get what you want in this life. Sickness is part of nature. Recovery is part of nature. Death is part of nature. And a good, wise person, male or female, monk or whatever, nun or whatever, will always not fight the world, but make peace with the world. Not to try and cure the virus or people with the virus, but to care for them. The more we care, rather than try and cure, the healthier the world becomes. I have a question here from, can meditation do more? Oh, yes. Meditation is a wonderful thing. When we really meditate deeply, then we're not really concerned about things like coronavirus. And I think I mentioned, I might tell the story, that Ajahn Chah told me that for many years he had malaria fever. It was just what forest monks had to endure in his generation, living in the wilderness areas of Thailand, which were lots and lots of jungle. And he said that's just what he had to get used to. But he told me that once he had a very, very hot fever, and he was also a little bit, he can't say averse, but I can't say fed up, is there something else I can do with this? So instead of trying to take some medication or fight the fever or whatever, he decided to sit down and meditate with the fever. And described how it got hotter and hotter and hotter. But he didn't move in his mind. He just stayed in the center of the fever, went right inside of it. And he said it was like going to the eye of a storm. In the center, the very center, was cool. But if he moved, it was burning. So he stayed in that center where it was cool. And he could sense like a big fire getting stronger and more incandescently hot. And it got hotter and more fierce and more powerful. And it exploded. The fire exploded, and it was so cool and kept meditating deeply for a while. And that was the last time that he ever had malaria fever. That's how he got past it. How he overcame it. Interesting. Anyway, from Switzerland, if we have the right intentions in our heart, we don't have to control life during meditation as in daily life as well. Why is it hard to have confidence in that sometimes? One of the reasons is because sometimes we don't know what the right intentions are. And sometimes our mind can be very tricky when one starts meditating. We have the ordinary defilements of, you know, wanting this and getting averse to something else or wanting to cure the problems in the world. They are very easy, in a sense, objects of defilements, hindrances to notice. Once those have disappeared, and then you still can't get peaceful, there's something else going on there. That's why I often said, especially to the monks I train, that you know, if you are not peaceful, if things aren't working well, wonderful! Because that's where you might look and see what the problem is. These are very deep problems. Sort of powerful blockages, which sometimes you just cannot see unless you get to a point where all the other gross forms of the defilements have disappeared, and now you've got these refined ones. And those refined ones, once you see them, ah, yeah. So whenever I get, whenever I used to get stuck in the meditations, that sometimes I would try and force my way through. You are sleeping, you try and wake up. you're restless in trying to hold the mind still. The mind wanders and you pull the mind back and watch it like a hawk to make sure you didn't move. And that never worked for me, using willpower. So I decided to try the wisdom power. That worked. Wait, why? What is the problem? So I just stopped and looked, rather than trying to judge and force. I stopped and looked, and after a while, you saw, got ya. There was a wanting there. There was something which I couldn't see, which was stopping me going deeper. And that was wanting. Once I saw that, just seeing it was all I needed. And then it vanished, and it just went into deep meditation. And it reminded me of that simile which the Buddha always gave of the problem of meditation, of wisdom, personified as this Mara, a person who does everything to try and stop people getting enlightened, to stop people finding truth, who tries to control people, which is why that Mara was the head of this level of heavenly beings, devas, of the Paranimittavasavati realm. Devas who wield power over other people's creations. Control freak in chief. I gave him that nickname. And then, how you overcome this powerful being called Mara is never through force or willpower or chanting or all the monks and the nuns would ever do. They say, I know you, Mara. And Mara would say, they know me, they know me. And he would just hunch his shoulders, droop his head, and walk away. It's through knowledge, through understanding, through recognition, through wisdom, that Mara was always overcome. And so, this is why that we see what the problems are. When it's a problem, great, now I have the chance to grow and go deeper. So you learn from the difficulties in meditation. And you know you're learning if the mind becomes more peaceful. Sometimes it was like that. You'd be meditating for hours and nothing was really happening and what's wrong, and you'd look, you see it, yeah, got you. And then that's only just a way of speaking, yes, got you. It's just like the noticing what the problem was. And as soon as you noticed it, whoosh, it vanished and you went to a deeper state of meditation. So, right intentions. It's wonderful to have the right intentions in your heart, not in your body. Let the body disappear. Let the mind disappear and just go deeper and deeper in, as far deeper as you can possibly go, till everything vanishes. You just got actually nothing. Anyway, the next question. When you have an addiction, should you just accept it or fight against it? Fighting against it doesn't sound like the Buddhist way of handling things we don't want in our lives. You know, sometimes if there's a bushfire in Bodhinyana Monastery, we fight the bushfire. We get out with all our equipment and our hoses, even the nuns, they get their firefighting equipment out and they really go for it. There's some things which we fight. It's our duty, but that's really outside there in the world. Addictions, why do people have addictions? And one of the reasons we start addictions is, talking to people for such a long time who have addictions was just a lack of self-esteem. A lot of times they don't feel their worth very much. They don't think they deserve being free of the addictions. That trouble is their home. It's a very painful home, but they don't think they deserve to be free. So sometimes some of the addictions which people have are just self-destructive and making people feel worse by saying, you're a bad person, you're an addict, you're watch porn or you take drugs or you're addicted to this and addicted to that. That doesn't really help them, it just drives them deeper into the lack of self-worth and makes that self-love much harder. So, to be able to give people esteem, to get them to know that they don't need to be perfect, the old story of taking them for a walk in the forest and asking them to find a perfect tree and to see that all the trees are bent and crooked, and the ones they like the most beautiful trees in the forest, are the damaged ones. They say, see, that's a beautiful tree there, it's all crooked and damaged by the storms of life, just like you. And then sometimes they really get that, and they realize why those addictions were there in the first place. They get to the root of it. And then sometimes, not always, but sometimes, the addiction is cut off. And lastly, if one has difficulty in focusing on object, is it better to resort to contemplative medication? I'm sure this must be a typo. They got contemplative medication. Meditation. If one has difficulty in focusing on an object, the reason is because you're trying to control that object, you're doing it. You can contemplate, what's the difficulty on focusing on object? Say, you know, suppose you're watching a Sri Lankan, I think Gita. So if you are, she's a female, so if you were just, I was going to say, if you were a Sri Lankan man watching a cricket match, do you have difficulty focusing on that? If you are watching a great movie, is that difficult to watch? If you like it, you find it enjoyable, you get some pleasure out of it, it's so easy to watch. Sometimes as a monk, you just get out of your kuti and watch the sunset. So easy to watch a sunset, I don't need to force myself, because it's delightful and fulfilling. So whenever I'm watching an object, usually I don't choose which object I watch. I let the object come to me. And I see so much beauty and delight in it. As I said when I was doing the bodily relaxation, you look at your bodily feelings. And once they relax, it's delightful. And it's a pull for me to, I see resistance, to take my mind from the body to the mind. So, can I have another couple of minutes, please? And sometimes give you a few more minutes. Just being with a delightful body. Well, the same, sometimes, this is one of my problems of being a meditation teacher. Sometimes you meditate, you get such beautiful meditation. You've got to come out again and sort of ring the bell and teach and answer questions. And sometimes, sometimes I thought to myself, I'm not going to come out, I'm going to stay in. But no, just I psych myself up out of kindness to make sure I come out at the right time, roughly, to be able to do my duties and services. It's not about me, it's about giving. It's about letting go. It's about doing your services, just as other teachers gave services to me. I've got gratitude and a debt to my teachers. So anyway, if you have difficulty in focusing on an object, just ask why. And get an object which is beautiful and kind and joyful, like your breathing. And if the breathing is not beautiful and wonderful, it means you've gone to the breath too early. So prepare your mind first of all. And I must admit that I give my gratitude for that teaching to my old friend Ajahn Jagua, who, when I started doing some talks, he came up to me and said, you're really good at teaching the deeper parts of meditation. You're getting nimittas and stuff. But he said, a lot of people can't even get close to there. Can you spend more time just teaching us about the early stages of meditation? And that just opened up this wonderful treasure chest of insights. Why is it that people can't just watch their breath? And it's because they go too soon onto it, and they use force, they use control, rather than spending more time just preparing the body and the mind before they watch the breath, which is why I just bodily relaxation, get nice and comfortable, getting some delight up with your body, going to things like peaceometers, present moment awareness, do it slowly, do it sort of gently, and really get into it and see the pleasure in it all. It is a present moment, which is a wonderful place to hang out. Sometimes I feel I'm being irresponsible just being in this moment, but I think that's okay. And then just coming into the silent mind, not saying anything inside to yourself, just being quiet. And then, if you watch the breath from that point, you've done that preparation first of all, it's easy. Because your mind is ready to watch the object of the breath. So, contemplation, yeah, but all the insights are there. They're all being taught, written in books, taught by the Buddha. So, see if you can find out how to prepare the mind and the body. And don't choose objects. Let the objects come to you. Okay, that's it, I think. So again, thank you everybody for tuning in this afternoon. I'll be back again same time next week. If samsara lets me, you can never predict the future, but I'm pretty healthy and this place is pretty good, and so I can't see any other option. And I should also announce that in 2 weeks' time, we have our Waisak celebration here. And so, in 2 weeks' time, there'll be an extra event on Sunday the 3rd of May. And for Waisak celebration, it will still be really Buddhist. In other words, no one will be here. It'll be very peaceful and empty and silent. Just myself in the morning from 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock giving some teachings, a little talk, meditation, and I forget what else I'm doing from 9 to 11, some chanting as well on Waisak. 9 to 11, and then 11 o'clock I go off for my lunch, and then in the afternoon from 3 to 5:30, and from 3 to 4:30 I'll be joined by our senior bhikkhuni nun, Ayahasapanya, so we can do a Q&A session. I mean, not just four questions, a long Q&A for an hour and a half. So very welcome to start thinking about some questions and sending them in for, I don't actually to where to, but I'm sure that you can find that out. Send them in for Sunday the 3rd of May. And in the meantime, I wish you all happiness and well-being for the next week and even longer. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. The mic is off.